Good evening, everyone. Welcome to OU Didn't Know Radio. We have a little technical difficulty getting in to the show, but I am tonight's host, JCD, back from my little time off. With me is the prophet, Rick Craig. Let's bring Rick in. Hey. Rick, are you there?
I am here. What do you say, brother?
How's it going?
Great, man.
Okay. Sorry about that. Had a little issues there. So what's going on? We got a big show tonight. We got Scotty Riggs joining us. I believe he's on hold right now, so we'll get to him in a moment. Plus, we've got a lot to discuss as far as a lot of news and rumors. We're going to take it back to the original concept of the show. So, Rick, what do you say? Let's get started.
Let's rock it.
Hello, Scotty. 928, hello, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, is this Scotty?
No, sadly, this isn't Scotty. This is Roy Lusher from the International Wrestling Fanbase. I just saw Scotty post this earlier, and I figured I'd call in and try to be one of the first ones to call in tonight, but no, it's not me. Or not Tim.
Wait,
it's
hang
not Scotty.
On 1 second.
Do we have to be invaded by Roy already? Good grief.
732, hello.
JCD, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's up?
It's Seth.
Yes, I know. What's going on?
Not too much. It's funny calling into the show. I'm used to being the one hosting.
Yeah, right? Okay, so well, we're waiting for Scotty to call in. Let's get right to some news and some rumors and stuff. I had this yesterday afternoon, and everyone else kind of picked up on it today, but it looks like it is 100% confirmed that the first inductee of the 2014 Hall of Fame class will be Paul Bearer William Moody. The news is not surprising, especially after, you know, Bearer's untimely passing right before WrestleMania. I guess the bigger news of this is the fact that The Undertaker is considering completely breaking character and going to do the induction next year at New Orleans. Rick, I'll kick it to you. What do you think, A, of Bearer going into the Hall, and B, the possibility of Taker pretty much killing the character of The Undertaker to do the induction?
You know, this is pro wrestling. I think everybody's smart enough to realize in today's day and age that this is just, you know, a job and a performance that they're doing. You know, the guy was obviously very close to William Moody over the years. William Moody helped him immensely in breaking the character and, you know, developing the character and breaking it big on a national and worldwide basis. I think it's the right thing to do. I mean, break the character, show the man your respect, you know, like you're supposed to.
I agree with that. Seth, what do you think of this news?
I think either way you can't go wrong. I think that if obviously Bearer should be in the Hall of Fame next year. In terms of The Undertaker, I think you can't go wrong. Either A, he doesn't do it and keeps his character, which I think makes him unique and great in that way, and have someone like Kane do the induction. Or I read that Michael P.S. Hayes would possibly be doing it, but I think Kane would probably be, I would prefer to see Kane do that, or have him finally break character for the first time and do this would also be great. So I think it's a win-win situation.
It would show the legitimacy to Paul Bearer, to William Moody, for his contributions.
I agree with both of you guys. Okay, we've got a caller on the line. Let's see, this might be Scotty Riggs. Hang on a second. 912 area code. Is this Scott?
This is him.
No.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to OU Didn't Know Radio.
What's up, guys? 912
area code?
Rick, are you there?
Are you there?
I'm here, boys.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me, guys?
Okay.
All right, great.
Yeah, we can hear you really good. So, okay, so Rick, you put this together, so I'm going to turn the forum over to you.
Mr. Riggs, this is Rick Craig, your favorite from your favorite page, PWO. How's it going, brother?
Doing good, my friend. Doing good. Glad we hooked up for this thing. Should be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a great time tonight. We even got Seth on here. He just had to be here to join you. Our host decided he couldn't have a party without Seth here, so he's here as well. So you got to make sure you're healing it big time, brother.
He's got a little flock in him, so he canceled the party just to join the party.
Yes, he did.
Exactly.
Going to the radio party. Isn't John supposed to be singing something to me right now?
I think that is a very distinct possibility, Mr. Riggs. JCD? Well, hang on, I gotta get my eye patch on.
Hang on.
Come on, JCD, let's roll it.
Oh,
we promised.
Hey, remember, I got a 3-week-old to talk to, so you gotta keep doing your thing.
Somebody's supposed to be singing here.
Seth, you were singing, right?
What's that?
You were gonna sing, right?
Seth has no idea what this is even about, JCD. Come on, let's roll with this. We're keeping the man waiting. He's not going to join us until we do. He already told me he's going to condongo on us.
JCD is breaking up a little bit. I can only hear every other thing he's saying.
Sorry about that. How's it coming off better now?
I'm pretty much okay. The same thing on my end. Everything's kind of breaking up, just to let you know.
Okay. All right, hang on. While I get that worked off, Seth, Rick, you got any other questions for Scotty right now? While I get
Rick, why don't you get the interview started?
I will be more than happy to. Scotty, you started off as, and I actually remember this. I'm old enough to remember this stuff, the Scott Stud. What did you feel, I guess, when you first started your career as Scott Stud, knowing you were taking a name from such a legend like Big John Stud?
Well, actually, the funny story with that is the guy who trained me, Ted Allen, he wrestled as a nightmare. He had trained other guys like Arn Anderson, Big Boss Man, Tracy Smothers, Ranger Ross, a few other guys. But he met me. I had just finished playing football in college. I was a 22-year-old kid, in good shape, you know, had great cardio, could go. Been watching wrestling since I was a kid, so I kind of had a mental picture of how to do things. Athletics, I learned how to take bumps and falls and stuff real quick, how to run the ropes. And he basically looked at me and said, you know, he goes, you look like just a stud in doing this. You know, he goes, you're just coming, everything's coming too good for you. And that's how Scott Stud came about. He actually gave me the name just by giving me a compliment. So that's how it kind of came to be.
So did it make you uncomfortable knowing the legendary name that you were, placed under?
In fact, I never really followed after him, never claimed to. It's like Ron Reese in WCW wrestled by Ron for a while.
Right.
He claimed to be part of, like, you know, part of his family because Ron was a 7-footer, 400-pound guy himself. So that worked. Me just being a good-looking kid, you know, there's so many studs or rocks and, you know, handsomes and everything else that are up in the business and, like, Tommy Dreamers and every little name that has a last name that's like an adjective or, you know, something like that type of thing. They kind of, you know, when you're just starting out, you kind of get something that just kind of, you know, you just kind of go with. You know, you really aren't thinking about it like, you know, you always think about this or that. If that makes any sense.
That makes perfect sense, man. JCD, you still alive over there?
Yeah, I'm here. Do I sound a little better, guys?
Not really.
Hello?
Say again?
Do I sound a little better now?
A little bit.
Maybe a tiny bit.
Okay. So Scotty, I'll ask you, what was the process getting you into WCW initially? How did that all come about?
How did I get into WCW?
Yeah.
To make a long story, because there's a lot of detail with it, but to make it a little bit shorter, I basically moved to Marietta when I got out of college, and one of my roommates was a just indie promoter. He was starting to run some small shows around just the north part of Georgia, and he ended up getting a ring in the back of his karate school so we could train back there and everything else. It was a ring that he bought and they used for shows. And I also started working out at Main Event Fitness, which was Lex's Sting's gym in Marietta. And all the wrestlers worked out there, everybody from, you know, Mick Foley, who was Cactus Jack at the time, DDP, Brad Armstrong, you name it, they all worked out there. And I started, you know, joking with the guys here and there, because my mom's wrestling and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they come to me like, cool, and everything else. And I told them, I said, hey, a friend of mine has a ring in the back of his karate school. If you ever want to train there, you know, I'd love to have y'all come over. And they were all like, and we're going down to Jonesboro to the power plant. You know, it's like a 45-minute drive from Marietta to train, and then a 45-minute drive back home for a couple hours, which is good, but we'd love just to be 15, 20 minutes, and we're out of ring, and we can work out in. So basically, Paige, Brad Armstrong, Steve Regal, Jake Snake Roberts, and every now and then a couple other guys come in, but they basically came over, we started training together, and I started working out a little bit more with Paige and putting a match together. And just Jake helped with psychology, Brad helped with moves, Regal helped with moves, and helped put things together, and Paige just took a liking to me. Took me down to the power plant, and we put a match on Jody Hamilton, who was the head trainer at the time. He was one of the assassins. And Jody just loved everything I did. He couldn't believe how naturally it came to me. And he asked me, how long have you been training? And Paige goes, get this. He told me to shut up. He goes, get this, Jody. Kids are wrestling just a little over a year. And Jody's like, you're kidding me. And he goes, would you like to do some TVs? I said, you know, why not? You know, it's just, a way to get my foot in the door, way to get noticed. And just to make a long story short, Jody said, I can't promise you anything, but at least I can put you on TV, can bring you into some shows, get you looked at. I'm in control of some of the matches so I can get you into good matches. So I ended up having a match with Regal, which was like 7-8 minutes. It was a pretty long match for, you know, a named guy going against pretty much a young kid, a young nobody with himself. And I had that match, had a tag match, it was a dark match. Me and a guy named Tommy Angel against the Nasty Boys, which was okay, but it was a dark match. They kind of, you know, just something to entertain the crowd I wasn't making. And then the match that made the difference for me was I had a match with Steve Austin at the center stage where they used to do other TVs in Atlanta for Saturday night. And Steve made me look like $1 million. Of course, he put a rib on me. He walked up and said, hey, kid, can you work the leg? Yeah, sure. Well, okay, listen to me. We're going to work the leg to the match. 15 minutes later, hey, kid, you know how to work your arm? Yeah, sure do. Great, we're going to work the arm. Just listen to me, follow me. We're going to do good. He finally walked, hey, you know how to work the head? Like, yeah, that's what we're going to do. And this is right before we're getting ready to walk out there. So he's, you know, throwing all these body parts at me. But we end up having an 8-minute match that Nick Patrick was the referee. He made me look like a 10-year veteran, a superstar in the ring. And even Dusty Rhodes, who was the head booker at the time, went to me after the match and said, kid, that was phenomenal. I booked the match, knew the finish, but you were so good in it that I still didn't know who was going to win. He goes, you did a great job. And so that was kind of my start into WCW. And from that point on, they put me on some house shows, just like the first, second match, just to kind of get noticed. There was really nobody at the time. I was a nightly deal. I was doing dark matches at TV, rarely working any TV matches. But they brought me in everything. I was getting a nice little payday, and it was just a chance to get myself in the door.
Nice, nice. So I owe you that stuff. I'm gonna do this for you right now. Hang on.
Say again?
Brace yourself, Scott. Here we go. Got my eye patch on.
You got a question for Scotty?
Mr. Riggs, ask many of our guests, you played both a face and a heel. What did you prefer, one or the other? Do you prefer to be a fan favorite or the bad guy?
Really, to tell you the truth, prefer being a bad guy. That is the most fun you can really have. Being a face, I grew up watching Ricky Steamboat, so I understood what it meant to really sell, to have a comeback and everything else. Because he was phenomenal at that. So that was kind of what I patterned my wrestling over in being a babyface. And when I got the chance to be a heel in the Flock, that gave me a greater understanding of what, you know, wrestling match is all about, how to, you know, use that babyface, give them a way to be good, but you to really draw heat. I mean, it was so much fun to be hated. It really, really is. You know, being a
good
guy,
I feel like that's so popular.
You are really good. Being a cheerleader and all this stuff is great, but really when you're the bad guy and you're getting people mad at you, when we were in the Flock, we were sitting ringside, and people really didn't realize how much real heat we had with the fans because we were just sitting there amongst them. They can cuss you. They can throw stuff at you. They can say everything in the world. You know, we got a one security guy who's really around this, making sure nothing happens, but we are getting blistered. I mean, we were jumping Benoit and Paige and Jannetty and all these other guys along the way for shows and setting angles up and stuff. We were just getting, people hated us. That match we had in the Georgia Dome against Michaels and Benoit, it was me and Saturn. And we beat them and we cheated with Raven sliding in to get Benoit the DDT. Saturn got the cover. We took off up to the crowd to go back towards the dressing room like we came down. And we actually got into a couple of scuffles along the way. I punched a guy in the face who hit, I think it was Kidman, hit Kidman in the back. And we actually had to fight our way up through the people. That's how much heat. We were actually fighting the fans. And that's actually fun. I mean, that means you're doing your job. They might, you know, believe whatever they believe when they come in. But when you can get them that mad at you, they want to fight you, that's doing your job right.
Very interesting. Yeah.
We got a call in 928 area code. What's your name?
My name is Roy Lucer.
Okay, do you have a question for Scotty?
Who let this guy on the program?
Hey, Scotty, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit, but I got you, Roy. How you doing, buddy?
Man, I'm doing great, and it's finally a pleasure to be able to talk to you after all these years. I'm the one, the admins of the IWF group, and the one that helped you out with that YouTube video of the Old American Male thing last year.
Yeah, I remember. I know, man. I know exactly who you are. You helped me out with so much on the social media stuff. It's ridiculous. You got the free American Male video going for me and all that good stuff.
I just wanted to ask you, how's life treating you since the gallbladder surgery you had last year?
It's doing a lot better. I mean, I've had to change my diet tremendously. You know, there's some things that I really like to eat that just didn't sit with me anymore. I kind of knew what happened. But, you know, you just got to change your diet and learn how to live with it that way. And in one sense, it's doing me wonders. So it took a little while to get over things. But it's finally getting back to normal. Take a little while, like you said.
Yeah. And what were some of your highlights working with Raven during the whole angle with the Flock when that was a big going on with the company?
What was it again? Did that the first part?
Okay. Yeah. What were some of your highlights when you were working with Raven and the rest of the Flock? When you were with WCW, I mean, that was such a huge deal in the company, especially to the hardcore fans that knew Raven from ECW, and the company and WCW didn't even bother to change his character whatsoever. He was the same Raven in ECW that he was in WCW, and that made a big deal to a lot of the hardcore fans, and you got to be a part of that. And I wanted to ask you, what were some of your highlights working with, you know, Reese and Kidman and Raven and the rest of the crew?
pretty much, I mean, there were a lot of highlights. One of the best ones was when we did the injury with the eye into the chair. I was supposed to be Raven's Tommy Dreamer, a guy that in WCW. I was going to be the Tommy Dreamer personality that he fought with for a while. And then we did the injury, and it was a legit injury. Kevin Sullivan said, let's turn this into an angle where you two fight it out, and he ends up joining. But he's fighting his way to join, in a sense. And so we got to, you know, one match I had with Perry Saturn in Cincinnati, where I had the eye patch on, it came off, but I had the opaque lens in to protect my eye from the the ring lights, because that gave me headaches. And I just my eye looked so much more damaged. And I got to climb up on the top ring rope, on the turnbuckle, on the ring post. Looked like I was going to jump on Saturn, but instead I jumped over the guardrail into the flock. That was cool. Wow. It was hard because I had no depth perception because of the eye injury. So I just had to jump out as fast as hard as I can. And Arn Anderson thought I was going to be an idiot to do it. He goes, dude, you're not Rey Mysterio. You're 230 pounds. You're not 175 like Rey. He goes, you can kill yourself. I said, but you can imagine how cool it's going to look. And I was like, hey, do what you got to do. And it turned out great to do that. And then when I got to wrestle Raven at World War III, the night before during the flock, when we did the drop toe hold reversal, he took a chair, did the nine count, just got over to cover him, and got the one, two, and Raven just got his arm up. And you hear the crowd, 20-some-odd thousand people in Pass of Auburn Hills in Detroit. You hear this crowd go, oh, all in unison. Almost, you know, they thought I was going to win. And I remember me and Raven were laying there. I said to Raven, dude, we got him. He goes, yeah, I know. Because you just felt it. You know, you felt the rush of the people. And it was just like, you know, we were like the fifth match on the card, I think. And you know, they still had the Battle Royal and all the other matches to go. But to have the people in the palm of our hands, phenomenal to do that. So
that's
really
awesome.
A highlight. You know, a great move and a great match that you had the people right there. It was awesome.
And then one last question for you. You know, growing up, I do remember that you said you were a wrestler. And who were some of those wrestlers that growing up that you idolized that, you know, when you first decided to step into the ring that, you know, you kind of, like, wanted to copy their style or kind of,
kind of emulate a little bit? Yeah, I grew up on NWA wrestling, Mid-Atlantic, the Carolinas, with Jim Clark Promotions, and also with Georgia Championship Wrestling with Gordon Soley. So I kind of grew up watching the Road Warriors a little bit. I was a huge Ricky Steamboat fan, huge. And he was like the good guy that I really dug. And then there was Terry Funk, who was the bad guy that I dug. And so those are the two guys that I really, in a sense, you know, just grew up watching and idolizing, in a sense, and just pattern what I wanted to do as a good guy, bad guy after, and stuff like that. So really growing up, I mean, I grew up also with Paul Jones, Black Jack Mulligan, Flair when he was starting off, Greg Valentine, Walter McDaniels. Those are the guys I watched all the time. Jake Snake Roberts when he was starting off in their Legion of Doom and had that big King Kong Bundy and Paul Ellering and all those guys, Jay Youngblood, the Briscoes. There were so many great talents just in that one area. Every now and then we got WWF that came on USA Network. Like once a month we get their Madison Square Garden show. So I had a taste of who those guys were with the Bob Backlund and Billy Graham and stuff like that. But really, really grew up in Southern wrestling, which had more intensity to it, you know, more believability.
Thank you for the call, Roy. Scotty, I got a question for you. You were in WCW during the highest of highs, 96, 97, 98, and the few guys I got to meet from WCW during that time, I always get the same question. I always get fascinated by the difference of answers. Did you ever think it would end the way it did?
Never think it was going to end the way it did? No. Really, it was such a great time. The wrestling fans got really, they reaped the benefits of it because they were getting two hot shows, Nitro and Raw, competing against each other. Who's going to have the better show? You know, we had the 3-hour show and had the time over. They had the 2-hour show, and we were both live, and everything was hot. And the only thing that told me that there might be problems in the future was when only one or two guys controlled everything that was going on. And the problem was it was the wrestlers. Bischoff was supposed to be the boss, and he was doing what guys had, what they call creative control in their contracts, so they could either do, they basically do what they wanted to do. There were guys that would come in to Nitro, have a match, and then, you know, these were the upper echelon guys, the NWO cats, and they were basically the shitsters of the whole thing, but they came in and go, no, I'm not wrestling the match. They got two interviews, one at the 9 o'clock hour and one at the 10:15 time. You know, just when everything was hot. You know, that's when they wanted to, and we're going to run at the end and lay it out. And they didn't want, and so we didn't have whole shows scrapped. That was the only telltale sign that something was going to, the end of the rainbow was going to come and there was going to be no gold at it, basically. Because there was no leadership. And that was the one thing that kind of was a telltale sign with it. And when you got the inmates run the asylum, that's when things go bad. And that's really, really what happened. Everyone was using it for their own vehicle instead of trying to be a team. Before Nitro was happening, we had Saturday Night TV. Everybody was really working together to make WCW successful. It was a great unified locker room. When Nitro hit off and they brought in all these WWF guys, they brought in the creative control clause. Those guys were the ones who kind of had to have their own dressing room. Everything they had to have was promoted. They had to have this. But they were the ones who kind of really stirred the pot and made it where it was uncomfortable to be there.
Okay. Nice. Rick, you have anything else for Scotty?
Oh, I've got so many questions for Scotty, I can't see straight. Scotty, we've been too serious. Well, before I ask you another serious question, we need to heal it a little bit. Are you ready? You ready for healing it a little bit? Here's my question for you. When I Google the words wrestler and Scotty, and I get too hotty before Riggs, what is your thoughts on that?
Hey, props to him. Everybody in the world asks me if I'm Scotty too hotty. I'm like, no. I never did
not
the word.
Scotty too hotty.
I don't have long hair. You know. I know Scotty's a great guy, and you know, he doesn't get any Riggs questions, but I always get the hotty. I'm like, I know it was American Male, but not a Scotty too hotty. There's a difference.
You
know,
also get Scott Hall.
The worm and got the worm over, so
that's right.
I don't mind sharing this. You know, I'm not even sharing the spotlight. He's got the spotlight. I'm basking in his shadow. So,
all right. In all seriousness, Scotty, when you, well, I guess when WCW went under and got bought out by Vince, why didn't you end up in WWE?
Well, the main reason. When I left WCW and went to ECW, if you remember that.
Right.
I had a good run in there with Rob and Dreamer and me and Carino and Jerry Lynn. You know, we headlined some cards, we did some pay-per-views, we did this and some other things, did a lot of TVs. And when ECW even went under, the few times that I talked to, like, Jim Ross and those guys there, they wanted, you know, in a sense to... They knew I was a good wrestler and everything, and I had talent in the ring, but they didn't know what to do with me as a character. And when they gave me some of the ideas that they wanted me to do, and I'm not going to talk about it, they're all just too hokey, but they gave me some ideas for a persona, and I'm a guy going, guys, that's not even me. It's like, not saying it's a thing, but it's almost like they made, when they made Brodus Clay, who's this big, mean, tough guy, and Tenzai, a big, mean, tough guy, and they made one the Funkasaurus, and not the other one Sweet Tea.
Right.
Matt Bloom, who is Tenzai, was one of the toughest, meanest guys in Japan, and people, he had credibility. Now he's in WWE, and he already knows this entertainment aspect. And he went in there trying to be the toughest Japanese guy. He was over there. They didn't know how to use him. So what they did, they made him into a dancer. They made him into, and he's going, hey, I'm collecting a paycheck. My family's back in the States. With a major company, we're working on the town and making good money. I'm going to be an entertainer. At the end of my career, I'll do that. Me, I just didn't did not know what they were going to do with me. When I saw they took, and here's another reason why I didn't want to go there, because I just had hesitancy towards it. When I saw they took Billy Gunn from a Cowboy, which was a mediocre thing, good but not strong, he became part of DX as Mr. Ass, and that was on fire. Him and Road Dogs, the New Age Outlaws, Whole Nine Yards, that was just incredible what they were doing with DX and Whole Nine Yards, the Suck It thing and everything else. When they could turn Billy Gunn from Mr. Ass and DX on Top of the World to Chuck Loves Billy, Billy Loves Chuck, and do a homophobic storyline with the guy and basically shove him down at the end of the roster, I knew that that place was nowhere that I could trust what they were ever going to do with me. And the same reason Sting never went there. You know, I talked to Sting about it. He's like, dude, I can't go there because I can't trust what they're doing something that I built 10, 15 plus years to build, that I can step into the ring, do something with The Rock, and The Rock would look at me and go, who are you, a clown? And it would crush him. He would have no credibility with any WWE people or anything, and he would get shoved out. Same thing that happened to Booker T. It took Booker T, if he wasn't such a great worker, Booker T basically got punked out by The Rock, going, who are you? When Booker hit the ring on him. It completely crushed Booker T. But if Booker T wasn't so good with his spin Rooney and everything else that gave him something for fans to latch onto, he would have died off like a lot of other guys did, like your Sean O'Hare's, your Columbos, the other young talents that were in there that were just flashes in the pan. That could have happened to Booker. But now if you look at Booker, he's in the Hall of Fame. If he wasn't so good, he would have left.
Scotty, do you think Vince has to humble you if he didn't make you?
Well, that's what happened to Bagwell, basically. Bagwell got humbled and got fired after a couple weeks of being there. Bagwell went in there with a little bit of an ego, and that's the thing. If Vince doesn't make you, he is definitely not going to he's going to make you work harder than anything. And I understand that, but then again, you also got to look at what you've done before you got in there. You don't expect what you've done before you got in there. Which was, to him, WWE is the only thing that exists. It's his only universe. Everything else around it is just, you know, is revolving around him. He's the center of it. Whether we, even when WCW was competing hard against him, he still really didn't matter. He didn't care what we did. He was going to do what he wanted to do. And so, you know, you got to respect that because it's his company. But then again, he's also going to look out. If you look at things, only one guy in their broadcast puts over any other wrestling. That's John Layfield. You know, John Bradshaw Layfield. He's the only commentator that talks about any other past wrestlers or anything else. And I don't know how he gets away with it, but I think because he's a multimillionaire away from wrestling, he can say what he wants. And if Vince fires him, he don't care. But the thing is, you know, everybody else, they act like no other wrestling ever existed. They take signs away from fans when they have signs up for other wrestlers in other places. They take, you know, anybody else that's not on their roster, they'll take their signs, anything, boom, gone, see ya. And that's just the way they run their business. And, yeah, in a sense, you could be a wrestler, but then again, do you want to be a cartoon? They're not even wrestlers anymore. They're all superstars. They're celebrities. They're all TV stars. I never got into wrestling to be that. Sure, it comes along with the territory, but it's not what my draw was. A lot of these guys, if you look at them, they're all copycats. They all basically do the same style match, a lot of the same maneuvers, a lot of just the same patterns of matches. It's all, you know, a little bit of shine, a little bit of heat. The babyface makes a comeback. It's the same four, five, six moves. Randy Orton, John Cena. There's just so many you can run down the list. Kofi Kingston, The Miz, they all do the same couple of moves if they're doing a comeback or if they're all patterned. They're all doing the same five, six moves. They do their comeback, they do their DDT, their power slam, their five knuckle shuffle. Everything is patterned, and that's not wrestling. Wrestling is supposed to be your reactionary to the fans. Instead of them reacting to what the fans give them, they're trying to make the fans react to what they give them. That's a TV show. And there's no SAG insurance. There's no SAG card. There's no anything that goes along with the TV show they put on and the live shows they put on, they should have something to go along with the Screen Actors Guild to do a TV show like that. They should have insurance. They should have unions. They should have everything in the world protecting those guys. Basically, they can be fired like John Morrison was, basically because of his injuries, and let go and nothing done with, and now he's off on his own. So why do you really want to be part of that cutthroat political business unless you got someone who can, in a sense, you can take care of yourselves? And you can't, though. You have no stability unless you're a huge draw. You have very little stability with those guys.
Awesome.
How's that?
That was healing it, buddy.
Let me just put a soapbox there for a second. That was long and winded.
Woo! Scotty, you got it. Where can we find you?
Where
social media,
me?
Website, any upcoming appearances?
Right now, got my Twitter, which is Real Scotty Riggs. You got me on that. Facebook, I just started I've had a regular page, so I just started a fan page under D Scotty Riggs. You can get on there. I'm about to end my other Facebook page because there's so many people on there. I got 5,000 people on there, and probably about half of that don't even interact. I don't even know if they're active anymore on there, but they're there, but I can't differentiate between them, so I'm about to get rid of that page, but keep the fan page just because those are the ones I know that are genuine, true fans and people, so that's cool.
Just don't ditch me, Scotty, all right?
Huh?
So just don't ditch me, all right?
I'm not going to ditch anybody. Anybody who wants to stay with the flock or stay with the pack and be healed about it can give them a fan page.
Rock
and
on.
We're all good, so. And, you know, I'm on your show, so we already got some credibility between us. And then also right now, I just found out today, we're doing a flock reunion in Charlotte the first week of August, I think it is, for the Mid-Atlantic Legends Fan Fest. So I just spoke to RVD today also, and he's going to try to get on it. So me and him can hook up. He lives out in Cali. We've been best friends since 92. And we rarely get to see each other anymore because he's out in Cali and I'm on the East Coast, so we got a whole nation between us. But we still keep in contact. But he's going to try to get on that because the guy who's doing it, Greg Price, is the promoter who actually introduced us. So it's a way to kind of like just maybe get him and the wife there, come out, and we'll hang out, we'll do the thing, and get to hang out a little bit together. And plus, it's a flocking. You know, I think Raven's going to be there, and the Sick Boy, Lodi, and myself. Not sure about Saturday, I think. I know Kidman can't because he's working with WWE. Maybe Reese might get there. But we'll work. I'm going to find out for sure if he's all going to be there. But it's going to be a fun thing. We're there on the 3rd for like 5 hours, from 2 to 5, I think, to do an autograph session.
Cool.
That's the main thing I found.
Very cool.
Got some other things in the book. WrestleCon up in, I can't remember the name of the city right now, but it's... It's another thing that we're doing the flocking, you know, and that's in November. So we've got a few things coming here and there. I don't do the comic book conventions like some of the guys do. Just really, I've never ever been into that, the science fiction stuff. Even though they're drawing in wrestlers all the time because they're celebrities, just like, you know, Planet of the Apes guys and all that other stuff. So Star Trek and everything else. So I guess wrestling fits into that, but, you know, crazy stuff.
Very cool. Well, Scotty, on behalf of myself, Rick, and Seth, we want to thank you for taking the time to come on. We really enjoyed it. It was educational, and, you know, hope we can have you on again soon.
Hey, man, it was definitely a pleasure. Rick, John, who was the guy who was supposed to be partying but decided to join the show? I'm sorry.
Seth.
Rick, John, Seth, thanks for having me on here, guys, and, you know, just Godspeed to you.
Thank you so much.
See you guys.
Take it easy, man.
Pleasure. Okay, so that was Scotty Riggs. Great interview, very informative. So, all right, good stuff from Riggs. So, okay, so I guess we'll regroup for a second, take our 14-second break, and we'll be right back. Oh.
Uh-oh, it's the Big O, and you're listening to Oh You Didn't Know Radio on the PWP Network. Stay tuned, we got a great episode ahead, and if you can't handle that heat, get the hell out of my ozone. Uh-oh, it's the Big O, and you're listening to Oh You...
Okay, so we're back.
A little technical difficulty there.
John, you are a technical difficulty.
Sorry.
We're back.
Sorry. So, okay. So, all right, so that was Scotty Riggs and the Big O twice. So, moving on.
Do you need to deal with the little one?
No, he's actually calmed down, so I'm good for a few more minutes.
Okay.
So we actually.
Hey, JCD, before you get started,
together.
John, before you get started, can I give a quick shout out? Roy Lusher, thank you so much for joining us tonight. He is a good friend of mine. He's got a lot of great wrestling pages as well on Facebook, and is a, like I said, he's a good friend of mine. And I'm glad he got to come on the show and ask some good quality questions.
Yeah, he was great. I thought he was really good.
Yeah. So, okay. So, we good?
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So, where do you guys feel like going next? John Cena, Undertaker, Rock, independent signings, possible SummerSlam main event, someone,
you know,
someone directly.
Let's,
where are we going?
Let's start with Ryback.
Okay.
Can we start with Ryback and get opinions on what we think of this heel turn is?
Okay. Rick, would you like to go first?
No, let's let the fearless leader go first.
Okay. I think that I thought that Ryback was going to turn heel for a while now. We had been talking prior to WrestleMania how there weren't a lot of challengers for John Cena for the WWE title, so I think that turning him heel was the right choice. The way it's worked out, it's been okay. It's a little bit too much, you know, people are saying he looks a lot like Goldberg with the hat and the leather jacket and the whole look. Is very much Goldberg. I still think he's very underrated on the mic. I think that his promos are much better than a lot of people say they are. But, you know, I think it's better if he does win the title. I don't think that he's going to, but I think that he should.
Okay. Rick, you want to go next?
Sure. I agree with Seth. I mean, John doesn't have many challengers that haven't already been challenging at one point. Ryback's obviously a prime candidate for that. It just, to me, I guess what bothers me about it is it's not, it doesn't seem sincere to me. And the reason I feel that way is because I just don't feel the reasoning behind it is legitimate, I guess. He's at the height of popularity. It just feels like it was forced and like it was done by a corporate boardroom, not because there was a legitimate beef between John Cena and Ryback. And it's just not selling as well. Not that Ryback's not trying to push this and trying to, you know, make this work, but it just doesn't seem genuine to me.
I think this is pure 100% proof that all the drama and malarkey with Rocky is 100% real. That turn was way too rushed. It made no sense coming out of WrestleMania. It was done a week to 2 weeks too soon. You know, how do you lose to Mark Henry, then come out and clothesline him and clothesline Cena and turn heel and become the number one contender, and Henry's forgotten? What they should have done was have the Henry Ryback rematch, then have Ryback turn after Ryback beat Henry, and then go after Cena. I really think this is proof that all the Rocky stuff was true, despite all the damage control done by both parties. And I'll be honest with you, tying the injury into it, I would be more surprised now if he didn't win the title than if he didn't.
That makes sense.
That makes complete sense. I mean, he should have. I mean, Ryback, the character that he has, he would not let Mark Henry off that easy. It just doesn't make sense.
Right. Right. I want. All right. So. All right. So we've got Ryback. I want to delve into one more thing because I think we could probably do about 10 minutes on this. The Shield. With the way they've been booked post WrestleMania, they've looked a million times better than they did even heading into WrestleMania. Where do you go? And Dean Ambrose was hand chosen to work with Undertaker. He came out looking like a million bucks working with Taker. Where do you guys see the Shield going, and when do you see the team losing streak ending? Anybody wants to go first?
Rick, go ahead.
Okay. I tell you what, I'm actually shocked. I mean, they actually letting Ambrose and company go over on Taker and Team Hell No. I was hoping it would go that way, but I wasn't so certain that WWE would pull the trigger on that, and it was surprising to see. They're actually pushing three younger guys and succeeding at it. They're getting legitimate heat in the arenas. You can see people, you know, with their signs and booing and all that stuff, and it seems legitimate. I think right now it's hard to say where they're going to go because they're after everybody, so you don't know who exactly is going to put an end to it. I will tell you if these rumors of extra Shield members coming in like they did to the NWO, you know, back in the late 90s, proved to be true, that will be the end of the Shield in the run.
Agreed. Seth?
I don't think that the Shield run ends anytime soon. I think that they're going to get the tag titles off of Team Hell No. And, you know, I think that it's time for them to start winning some titles and helping the titles look a little more relevant. But eventually, I see them, I guess it's the same kind of thing that Rick is saying, that I see them causing themselves to break up more than, like, John Cena making the Nexus break up kind of thing. I see them more breaking up between themselves, and that will allow Seth Rollins to go babyface.
Okay. All right, yeah, I think they're definitely going to take the tag titles from Team Hell No. That's probably going to happen at Extreme Rules. I can see them operating kind of under a Freebird rule, more or less. As far as the team undefeated streak, and I put this out on the page today, this ties into what I think my SummerSlam main event is going to be. I did originally have one main event on the main site. I'm since changing it. I think the main event of SummerSlam, and if you look at recent events, this, you know, and a lot of different reports out there about when people will be available, I think the main event of SummerSlam is going to be The Shield against The Undertaker and CM Punk. And that will be where The Shield loses as a team for the first time.
So they don't lose. They beat Undertaker and Team Hell No in a six-man tag match. Do you think they're going to lose to Undertaker and CM Punk in a handicap match?
I think that's when Punk's coming back. I don't buy any of these rumors that he's being added on to all these Raws. He's been added on and taken off a million times in the last 2 weeks. I think there's your spot to bring back Punk as a show of respect to Taker, and they take out the Shield.
I think you got to add a third person to that team, maybe a John Cena or someone.
No. No. And then have them implode from within.
Rick?
I think it's too early still. I think they've got a lot
of...
Yeah,
I do too.
I think they've got a lot of juice still left in them to pull the plug that early. And number two...
SummerSlam?
If they bring Punk back as a face again, I mean, come on. I think Man has kicked some major butt as a heel. He's gotten himself so over with the fans right now. They're cheering him as a heel. They turn him face. That could all just get flushed right down the toilet. I hope they don't do that for his sake.
Okay. All right. Well, all right.
Anyone got anything they want to take us home with? We got about 5 minutes to go. Anyone got anything else they want to put out there?
Well, how about Dolph Ziggler losing a million times after getting the belt?
He's only lost once.
Yeah.
To Swagger, and that actually makes sense. That
yeah,
one.
It does.
Swagger,
makes sense.
Big picture thing.
Yeah,
you know.
It does make sense.
Speaking of Ziggler, anyone buying into the rumors that Langston's the guy sending Caitlin the gifts?
I could see that.
When Ziggler made that comment out in the hallway when he's ready to smooch old AJ and Big E was there creeping, I guess is what he called it, because that he was doing it. That to me was just planting an initial seed in the eventual, you know, turn. Big E Langston has got a ton of potential. He's a huge man. I mean, we all know that. You know, you see him on NXT, you see what he's capable of really doing because he hasn't got to show us everything in the WWE. But that could be a big deal here later down the line.
Yeah, I see him winning the U.S. title from Kofi Kingston first because there are rumors that they want all three of Team Ziggler to hold titles at the same time. So I see that happening, but I definitely eventually see Big E feuding with Ziggler for that title, for the World Heavyweight title.
I definitely see that in a Shawn Michael Diesel type way. Yeah,
exactly.
I actually
tweeted that to Kevin Nash, and he replied to me. He actually corrected me that it was Shawn Michaels who turned on Diesel, while I was suggesting that Big E Langston would be the one turning on Ziggler. but
exactly.
It's a similar kind of situation.
Yep.
Speaking of Kofi Kingston, a colleague of mine had a discussion with me on another show about Kofi Kingston being a transitional champion. Do you buy into that? Do you think he's really going to ever get a legitimate push, or is he just a transition until they can decide what they really want to do with the belt?
Whatever happened late 2009, early 2010, he showed he can be a major player. That feud with Orton was phenomenal. I'm glad the Fandango stuff has died down because the initial rumors were the reason he beat Cesaro was to drop the belt to Fandango. I don't see that happening, thank God. But, yeah, I think, unfortunately, Kofi's going to be one of those guys, and, you know, that's just going to only go so far. He'll beat guys who he should beat maybe every now and then. Shouldn't be, and he'll be a guy that if you're a new young heel, you can go over and it'll mean something.
His legacy is going to be he's going to have a ton of belts. I mean, how many times has he had the IC, US, and tag team titles? I mean, good grief, the man's won a ton of belts, but he's not going to be remembered as a legend, right, Seth?
No, he's going to be remembered as a mid-card lifer. And I think that there are a bunch of newcomers that are heels, and I think it allows WWE to choose who they want to give it to next. Like GCD said, I think initially they were planning on giving it to Fandango, but his 15 minutes of fame might be over. But you've got guys like The Shield, you have Big E Langston, you have guys who are heels that are young and ready to hold a mid-card title.
Right. Yep, I agree. All right, guys, we got about 90 seconds left. Rick, anything in closing?
Well, I was going to ask another question, but if we're ready to close up, we can close up shop.
Okay.
I was going to ask, you know, what in the world's happening to Antonio Cesaro. But
you know what's happening to Antonio Cesaro, Rick? I'm glad you mentioned that. And there is a great article on ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com written by yours truly about where Antonio Cesaro could be headed.
Really? What did it say?
Is he headed to Money in the Bank?
You got
to
read the article.
Oh.
Read the article.
That's a
nice segue,
huh?
like that.
I think that Cesaro is definitely a strong possibility to win Money in the Bank.
I'm gonna leave you guys with two words: King Sheamus. I'll leave it at that. All right, guys. Another great week, another great episode of Oh You Didn't Know. We'll see you guys next week. Take care.
Later.
Bye, guys.